This is the 20th season of the Consumed podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Lewis. And this time around, I'm doing a quick retrospective with clips from the over 200 conversations I've had with eaters, drinkers, thinkers, and makers. I certainly can't include clips from all of them, so I stuck with the moments that have stuck with me over the last 5 years. I categorize them by the different kinds of guests I've had, so it's a great way for devoted listeners to look back or for casual listeners to dip in. I have so enjoyed reliving these moments, and I hope you will too. But first, a quick shout out to the Consumed podcast sponsors. Consumed is sponsored by Slow Life Magazine. Slow Life offers a wealth of information about what makes San Luis Obispo tick, from in-depth profiles of locals to features on homes in the area, stories about local bands and music, and a column about area restaurants written by yours truly. For the next issue of Slow Life, I covered the beautiful food and culture that Sarah, Pedro, and Chencho have cultivated at Corazon Cafe in downtown San Luis Obispo. The magazine publishes every other month, so look for it in your mailbox, pick up your copy at Boo Boo Records, or sign up for a subscription at slowlifemagazine.com. We all know eating fruits and veggies is an important part of staying healthy. Fresh, local produce has the most flavor and nutrition, but how do you know what's in season locally? Become part of the Tally community as a member of the Tally Farms Box program. Tally grows their produce and partners with other California farmers to include the freshest and best-tasting local produce you can find anywhere. Farming on the Central Coast since 1948, the Tally family created the Tally Farms Box to make healthy eating easy and affordable. Here's how it works. Select which size box you want, then choose pickup or home delivery and how often you want to get your box. It's flexible for customization and vacation holds, and included in all boxes are tested recipes and storage recommendations. Come be a part of Tally's healthy lifestyle. Visit tallyfarmsbox.com and use promo code CONSUMED for $10 off your first box. That's promo code CONSUMED for $10 off. Eat fresh, eat local, and eat lots of California fruits and veggies for better health. So, here's the episode about the people who make specialty foods. They're mostly bakers, but there's a coffee shop in here as well as an olive oil producer and ice cream person. I didn't know really how to categorize these folks, but this is the best I could do. So I'm going to start with one of my first guests was Dan Berkland. He really set the bar high for my guests on the Consume podcast. He's an excellent baker and owner of Back Porch Bakery, but he's much, much more than that. His inspiration is always community, and that's what we covered here. This is one of my favorite clips of all the episodes I've done. For context, the lead up to this is me asking what it was like growing up in Inglewood, a suburb of LA.
That's a tough question.
Yeah.
It was definitely home. Mm. It was definitely a place that I didn't want to leave when my family decided. It was my junior year of high school.
What worse time could there be? Yeah.
It was the densest community of kids you could find.
Yeah.
If you wanted to play 9-on-9 baseball, you just go outside, gather up your friends, head down to the park. Mm-hmm. And it was the richest mix of cultures and ethnicities that you could imagine. Mm-hmm. I mean, my neighbors were from, it was a black school, mm-hmm. a Mexican community, mostly. My neighbors were from Afghanistan, from Korea, from Argentina.
Oh my gosh.
From everywhere.
Yeah.
And everybody's house smelled so different.
Yeah.
Everybody's furnishings were different. Mm-hmm. Everybody's sense of humor
totally
was different. And for me, that was just normal.
So cool.
I mean, the idea of, we didn't talk about race or any race issues ever. It was never a thing. It was only until I moved to Santa Clarita, which is predominantly a white, suburban neighborhood, mm-hmm. which I also love.
Is that, I'm thinking Orange County,
County? That's Valencia area by Magic Mountain.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah.
That's when you start hearing weird and interesting theories about race and race relations and stuff like that.
Wow.
And it was stuff that I couldn't really, I would hear it and I would say, well, no, that's not really my experience. Mm-hmm. There was a celebration of differences and without any animosity or any, I don't know, it's hard to talk about. It's hard to talk about without sounding like, you know, a scientist who was in it and got out of it.
Yeah.
And I don't want to sound like, you know, I was an observer.
You were in there.
But even saying that sounds weird to me. Like I was in the whatever.
I
the
know
mess
what you
of
mean.
Something. And now that I.
But
I
you
know,
were part of a community.
Yeah. It was, you know, and that ties into everything having to do with anything I've done since then, including the baking. It was not about bread. I didn't care about bread. It was about, you know, community. It's always been about community. Or, you know, I spent 10 years over in Italy working in a guest house there. You know, as a volunteer, I didn't make any money or anything. The money was you get to live in Italy and hang out with the
Seriously.
Rest of the world.
Seriously.
But it was so much not about food. You had to nail the food so that the rest of life worked. If you didn't nail the food, forget about the rest of the life. You got to get the food right.
Yeah.
But once the food is right, that opens you up to the rest of life. It was always my perspective on food.
Sarah and John Peterson have the special honor of being the most downloaded episode of the Consumed podcast. Firestone Walker Brewery's David Walker came in a close second. While I'm guessing a lot of that has to do with the huge following they have for their Scout coffee shops and Honey Co. Roastery, they're also just wonderful to listen to, whether you've had their coffee or not. Sarah is the visionary for sure, and John takes care of business, so they're a great team, and you can really hear that in their episode. Do yourself a favor and listen from start to finish. When I posed the question, what would you eat on your last day, their answer was so lovely. You can't hear it in the audio, but they looked each other in the eye as Sarah described it, and she took it really seriously, like it was going to happen the next day, and she was planning for it. But we start here talking about their affinity for breakfast.
We are breakfast people. We serve
we
breakfast.
Are.
Yeah. We served breakfast for our wedding.
You did?
Uh-huh. Swedish pancakes, which are like crepes with lingonberries and like a couple different savory quiches. It was also like very economical.
Yeah.
Because we scrapped together
people.
Our...
Well, yeah, well, we had to pay for it.
But we don't eat like breakfast at breakfast time anymore.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm
Sarah's
I'm
the one
out.
To answer this.
Yeah. John is so funny. I like order for him at restaurants. I don't really order for him, but I translate the menus. Like, yeah. I love food.
Maybe somebody can tell me what's wrong with me, but I look at a menu and I just
he
see
just
words.
Sees like a jumble.
You just blank out.
And I'm like, maybe it's just that I've been married to Sarah so long, but I'm like, what should I get?
Okay, we're doing this. We're going to get this salad. We're going to get this little thing. We're
well,
gonna
maybe, John,
this.
You could make coffee for everybody.
Yes,
you know,
John's going to make us
that's
coffee.
That's what I do, yeah.
And then we're just going to cry the day away sitting outside in a sunbeam drinking our coffee eating scones fresh out of the oven and then we're gonna put together like a really beautiful salad with like a little like Meyer lemon and dressing and some herbs and I'm calling out short rib tacos.
Okay,
what do you think?
Yeah, that sounds good.
And we're just gonna like be outside until the sun goes down.
Yeah
with our family crying happy tears. No.
I've never felt so. I think I've done 35 of these now, and I've never felt so emotional about the final meal.
Aww.
Nice job, Sarah.
Thank well, Sarah you. Really took the final, you know, to heart there.
I know, it's like
she's like, we're dying tomorrow.
Chef and baker Tim Veach is one of the funniest people I've ever known, and it's just one of those cool benefits of having a podcast like this that you get to meet someone like him. Today, he owns Wayward Bakery in Los Osos, but when I interviewed him, it was right after lockdown began, and he had just started the business as a pop-up. We talked on Zoom about his background that spans from his early days as a grocery store cake baker to a chef in multi-Michelin star kitchens. But the best parts of our conversation, in my opinion, are when we talk about our shared experience as woofers. WOOF stands for Willing Workers on Organic Farms, where people can work on farms in exchange for room and board. Tim and his wife, Jeriel, did it for 6 months in Italy, just like Jake and I had been woofers for 6 months in Italy, only about a year apart. Every farm is different, and most are great, but here we tell stories about some of the less great ones we encountered, and I start here by talking about a farm Jake and I worked at.
In at least three of them, we walked in, and the family looked at Jake and looked at me and said, you, to Jake, you are on building that wall over there.
Yep.
And you are on childcare to me.
Yep.
Did that happen to you?
So when we were in Campobasso, that place that I was telling you about, I was saddled up with, oh my God, it's like a defunct agriturismo that never got completed. And this poor soul, just like his whole life was destroyed. His wife left him, this and that, all this stuff. And then he's just a terrible curmudgeon, angry, angry dude. And it turns out the only reason that he brought us in is because he has a sign off as agriturismo guests and then works us like slave labor throughout his entire thing to kind of clean the place up. So he gets all the tax benefits of being an agriturismo. And he's like a truffle hunter, a defunct truffle hunter. He's got these dogs, these horribly abusive cords, and it's a mess. This guy will not talk to Jeriel. She will not at all. She didn't see a woman for 14 days. And whenever he had anything to say, first of all, Jeriel's Italian is horrendous, which is not her fault. I took two semesters of Italian and spent 3 months there, and we're doing like the Rosetta Stone the whole time we're there, and she's like trying her best, but you know, you're trying to pick up a language in like 6 weeks.
And when you're an adult, a full grown adult.
Right. And this guy just won't even speak to her. Won't look at her, won't do anything. And like at one point we went over to his mother's house because she saw us walking down the street in town. And she brought us in because the town is so small. She knew that the two Americans walking down the street were clearly the ones staying at her son's house. And she brought her in. And when Jeriel came in, she gave Jeriel a hug. And Jeriel just like burst out crying. Just crying. She's like, yeah, it's stressful. And Jeriel almost died twice while we were there. And literally, like, no joke.
I believe you. That's the sad part, is I fully believe you.
I saved her life twice. Once in the Heimlich maneuver and once with like a steady run of vials of lavender oil in steaming pots of water to keep her from like, she had like the original coronavirus, man. She could not breathe at all.
Oh,
whatever
honey.
She picked up out there, like I was terrified. I thought we were gonna lose her. Like, I thought we were going to lose her twice.
Oh.
First time when she choked, and the second time when she couldn't breathe at all. And you're like, Jesus.
Wow. Okay, well, we didn't exactly almost die, but I escaped from a goat farm on foot with two backpacks.
Oh, yeah.
By myself, because Jake had left. He had to come home to California for something, and I had to get out. So I had to run away from this place.
Oh, yeah.
In the Dolomite Mountains.
Dude. Tuscany, Fattoria Burano. That's, dude, we had to get out. It was like, this guy asked me to move a gigantic pile of manure. And like, this is after like cleaning up a defunct olive orchard for like 5 or 6 days of Rosa Canina. And I don't know if you know what that is, but it's like these little rosebuds with like 1-inch thorns on them. Jeriel took one to the eye. Like, this was a nightmare of an establishment. And he was like, yeah, you're going to clean that up. And I was like, nah, we're gone. We're out. We didn't even have any place to stay. We're like, we're out of here.
Yeah.
Shantae Norwood owns Tasty's Cupcakes in Lompoc, California. And I got to meet her over Zoom during the pandemic. Shantae makes these gorgeous, crazy cupcakes that make people drool, including Meghan Markle and Prince Harry down in Montecito. They've ordered from her at least twice. The story of how Shantae started making cupcakes is definitely worth a listen, but I wanted to feature this long clip where she describes an interaction she had with someone who put in an order and then canceled that order amidst the protests following the murder of George Floyd. This story certainly doesn't define Shantae, but it is an important moment to me all the same. Like I said, this is a long clip, and because it's on Zoom, the audio isn't great, but it's worth sticking with to the end.
So I received an email from a potential customer She had previously placed her order through my website wanting to book for her daughter's graduation / birthday party. Mm-hmm. A few weeks later, I get another email from her stating that she recently found out that I was African American. And because of everything that's going on in the world right now, she would think it was best that she just cancel her order with me because our views are probably not the same.
How would she know that that was the case? Like, what? You don't know? It's not like you made a statement or anything?
I do not. I have not made a statement. I don't go on any of my social medias, or I don't voice my opinions like I probably should and want to. Mm-hmm. But I also have to remember, you know, I do have a business. And there could be backlash, and I don't want to, and don't get me wrong, I don't keep quiet. Yeah. I do speak up. I just know when to do it and how to do it. So when she said that our views may not be the same, you know, honestly, I thought it was a joke. I did. I thought it was a joke. I read the email a few times. And I just kind of stared at it. And my husband was asleep at the time, so he's usually my go-to. But I sent it to my cousin, who lives in Las Vegas, and another cousin in Los Angeles. And he was like, you need to share that. I didn't want to. I didn't want to share it, not because I didn't want, you know, people to know. I was afraid of the backlash. I didn't know if it was going to be negative, if it was going to be positive. I just didn't want the attention. But he's like, no, you need to. And I was in tears. You know, I was in tears. And he told me, you wipe your tears right now. Like, you know, he told you are a strong woman. You wipe those tears right now. Get over it. Like, don't do, you know, both of my cousins told me that. And he said, you post it or I'm going to post it. And so I sat and I thought about it and I said, you know what? Yeah, this does need to be posted. This is what people need to see, because, you know, a lot of people will just think that this happens to people who are doing something. I literally did nothing.
Yeah,
I did nothing at all. I've never met this woman. I don't know who she is. And she found out about me through one of her friends who had ordered from me recently, and she referred her to me. Yeah. And so that's how she even knew about me. So I've never met this lady a day in my life. I've never had a conversation with her outside of what she wanted to order. Yeah. And so when I received that email from her, it was hurtful because I've never experienced anything like that personally. So it was kind of like a shock. And like I said, I thought it was a joke. And then I went back to my previous email to see, wait, do the names match? Is this the same person? And it was. So I was like, oh no, this is real.
Did you respond to her? Did you email her back?
I did email her back. And, so the email that she sent me, that message from, when I went to respond back to her, said that the email was not working. So, really? Yeah. Yeah, so I responded, and I'm almost 100% sure that she saw my response on social media. Mm-hmm. I'm sure she probably thought I was going to react in a different way, a real negative, ignorant way, which honestly, I did want to react like that. But
of course,
I did, because it was it was ridiculous. But me being the bigger person and who I am today, I'm able to control myself and respond back in a way that's going to hurt you even more, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's what I did. And was so overwhelmed with the support. I was not expecting. Yeah. Let me tell you. I was not expecting the response that I've received from everyone. I just posted it on my personal Facebook.
Oh, it wasn't on your business account.
It was on my business account as well.
Okay.
I posted it on my personal Facebook at first.
Okay.
And then my cousin asked me to make it public.
Yeah.
So once he said to make it public, I was like, okay, this is what we're doing. Okay. Mm-hmm. So then I went to my business page and I posted it on there as well. Mm-hmm. Back then, that's when everything started happening, you know, what's going on with George Floyd. And so it was kind of like, wow, you know? Mm-hmm. But I'm glad that I shared it. Mm-hmm. I got so much love and support from people. The messages that I was receiving from people were so uplifting. And it made me feel so good to know that, you know, there's people out here that don't feel like that.
Yep.
Because you just never know nowadays. You just don't know. Mm-hmm. I have people from Australia and Canada, you know, reaching out to me. It went viral, which I was not expecting. At all.
I love that. I love that. Because it could have gone either way.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. That's what I was explaining to Matt, you know, when, mm-hmm. when I spoke with him. It could have went either way.
Yeah.
So that's why I was just like, okay, well, this is what we're doing. But I made sure that my tough skin was showing mm-hmm. when I posted it, because I was going to be ready for however yeah. it would have came. But it actually, it was a blessing. Mm-hmm. And it's been great since. I'm still meeting people to this day, because of that incident.
One of the unforeseen benefits of producing an interview style podcast is that it captures the sound and spirit of someone's voice, which is especially poignant after they're gone. I was so sorry to hear when Hush Harbor Bakery owner Penny Monroe passed away in October 2021, less than 1 year after I spoke with her. But I was also glad to have recorded her in conversation, talking about how she and her husband Donnie left the aerospace business in Southern California to start a bakery on the Central Coast in Atascadero. She also shared lessons she's learned from working in customer service and how they apply to life in general. Here's one of them.
This one day, one of our bakers had a baby. His wife was having a baby. And I had to call and cancel an order because he wasn't there to do it. He's having a baby. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this person was really upset and kind of, you know, let me have it all kind of ways. I knew I shouldn't have given you guys the order. And, you know, I'm okay. He's having a baby. I don't know what to tell you. It's, you know, those kinds of things. When I find now, it's just people not willing to hear themselves and understand priorities and kind of meet in the middle, mm-hmm. an unwillingness to meet in the middle.
You just said something I was surprised. I thought you were going to say they have to be able to hear. I thought you were going to say to hear you or to hear others. No, but you said to hear themselves. Yeah. And that is very different than even hearing somebody else. Like, would you listen to yourself? Like when your mom would say that to you, you know, would you listen to yourself? Yeah, that's a fast track to maturity, I would think.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think most of us do hear ourselves in situations where you're not getting your way.
Yep.
And being on the other side of that counter, being on the other side of that counter, not having a lot of the privileges and expectations in my life has been a good scope for me to see through and to try not to be that person when I'm out and frustrated with someone.
Mm-hmm. Marissa Block-Gaitan is the general manager of Pasolivo Olive Oil, a level 2 olive oil sommelier and Pasolivo's master blender. When she came over, she brought a generous setup of olive oil samples that we tasted together during the interview, and I learned so much about what is quite possibly my favorite food. Here I ask her about the term extra virgin when it comes to olive oil.
So extra virgin isn't just a qualification in terms of, I mean, I've just always thought of it as there's a process that happens, and the process is what certifies it, not so much the olives that go into the process. Am I right about that?
It's everything, actually. Okay. So it's that your olives get processed within 24 hours of coming off of the tree. That's mm-hmm. a huge part of it. If they sit too long, they actually naturally start to ferment. Oh, wow. So it's really important. That's why we're fortunate that we have the on-site mill. So everything gets milled within a few hours of coming off of the tree.
Yep.
And then from there, you can't have any heat or chemicals added in your process to extract more oil. So that's where the terms like cold press come in. Mm-hmm. First press, because what a lot of producers can do is they'll take their paste and they'll run it through the mill a second time to extract more oil, mm-hmm. but that automatically lowers the quality.
Yeah.
And then once you go through all of your milling, then you have to send your oils to get lab tested. They get tested for acidity and peroxide values.
Offsite?
Like to a certified lab. Yeah. Yes. Okay. And so there's certain requirements for the USDA. There's certain requirements for the Olive Oil Council that you have to fall below. And then even after that, you have to select a certified tasting panel, and they blind taste your olive oil for those flavor defects I was talking about.
Yeah.
So they'll be able to pick up if anything was wrong with your oil, if it sat too long, you know, olive sat too long before milling, if you added too much heat during your process. There's a lot of different things that can go wrong in the milling process.
Do you have a goal of becoming one of those tasters on that panel?
It would be a lot of fun.
Wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah, either on a tasting panel for like certification, or there's olive oil competitions.
Yes.
I would love to, because I love tasting olive oils from different producers from all over the world.
I loved talking with Stephanie Nye and Kirsten Feinberg, a.k.a. the Soup Gangsta and Little Red Hen Bread, which, now that I hear it out loud, sounds kind of like a rap duo. They are longtime friends via the farmer's market they both sell at, Stephanie on market-driven seasonal soups and Kirsten with wood-fired bread loaves. Here they talk about a failed business idea that is hilarious in the rearview mirror. We laughed a lot in this interview. Kirsten is the first to speak here.
I was thinking about how kind of you and I sort of fell into our what we're doing now almost by failure in a way, because remember Cowboy Pickle?
Then we had
like some stuff that she'll have to tell you about.
What's Cowboy Pickle?
Yeah, this is a very important part of the whole
I'm sorry to have left
to the
that
soup
out.
Go. Okay. Yes, very important.
The transition between soup or the Shine Cafe and soup was Cowboy Pickle.
Yeah.
Okay. Which was an epic failure in which he wasn't my husband at the time, I don't think. Very close. No, not.
But it had to be love in order to do this.
So my parents had a farm off of Toro Creek Road, and they grew kiwis and lemons. And my dad gave us a plot of land, like an acre. Mm-hmm. I went in a gravity-fed well and tilled the soil for us, and we were going to be I was like, I'm going to plant all these cucumbers and we're going to make pickles.
I'm on board. This is the kind of thing, like it hangs on an edge.
Right? Yeah.
It could have gone bonkers.
It could have.
Successful.
I was ready.
Except what happened.
I wasn't completely. So we planted all of these. Like an acre of cucumbers is so many cucumbers.
I love this story.
It's a stupid amount of cucumbers. And I didn't realize that they grow super fast. And so we had all of these cucumbers. I didn't have
And you
like,
didn't know how to pickle.
Pot.
I didn't know how to pickle.
She had kitchen. I didn't even have a jar. Like, we had a logo.
Of course, with the cowboy hat.
His last name spelled cowboy pickle.
Millennial thing I've ever heard. And I'm right at the end of it. It's like, I have this idea. It's cucumbers, and we have a logo. Oh my God.
We're going for it.
We're ready for biz.
So yeah, that failed. That was a fail.
So what ended up happening to all those cucumbers? Is it shameful?
I bet they got tilled in.
You don't even know?
I don't know.
You ran away.
My father was so disappointed. He was just like, never again. And just let's just erase this like it never happened. Let the cucumbers go back into the earth.
Yeah.
I'm sure we ate some of them, but an acre of cucumbers? I mean,
what does that have to do with your husband, though?
Well, he was the instigator of all of this.
It was his idea.
His boss, he built cattle funds for 1 million years, and his boss had passed away. And I had sold the cafe, and I was teaching preschool. And both of us were just, like, in this weird interim needing other career path places. So we were kind of, you know, throwing stuff like cowboy pickle out. We had a couple other really strange things we were going to do. But
I love it.
Cowboy pickle was the one that kind of sticks out in both my mind and Kirsten's.
Well, yeah, it had a logo, and you planted an acre of cucumbers. So, I mean, that's pretty far along.
They were probably even the wrong kind of cucumbers.
Oh, not even.
They were probably, like, a European, like, one of the big long ones.
McConnell's Ice Cream is a Santa Barbara icon that shows no sign of fading away, even after 3/4 of a century. In fact, the company opened a scoop shop just down the street from me in 2018, and whenever I walk by, people emerge with ice cream cones and smiles on their faces. I wanted to talk with Michael Palmer, who owns McConnell's with his wife, Chef Eva Ein, about what makes McConnell's so special. In this part of our discussion, we chatted about the ins and outs of working with milk and cream and the decisions Michael and Eva had to make to keep the brand sustainable.
When you're a manufacturer in food these days, you're less in the food business than you are in the food safety business.
Wow, really?
And when you're in the dairy business, you're really in the food safety business because there are things in dairy, particularly raw milk and cream, that will kill people. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you have a compromised immune system, which I do, or are older or not in great health, there's stuff like Listeria we've all heard of and other things that are not good for your system. And so you need to be incredibly rigorous if you're going to be willing to be a manufacturer to embrace all the things that go along with being a manufacturer. And the simple truth at the time, in the first few years of owning McConnell's, was that this was a building that not only would not allow us to scale, but it really wasn't built to do what we were asking it to do.
Especially in terms of food safety.
In terms of food safety, in terms of scale, in terms of you name it. And so we had to make a decision in about 2015, 16, well, again, are we going to stay a manufacturer? Or are we going to co-pack? And we, again, decided to remain a manufacturer. And so we built a brand new facility. And people do not build new dairy facilities in California anymore. It's not advisable. But we built a new dairy facility in Oxnard, about 35 minutes east of here, southeast of here. And so that's where McConnell's is now. And this is called the old dairy. That's called the new dairy.
Okay.
Strange that. and so that's about a 35,000 square foot facility. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that many people don't know, they say, well, you're a dairy. Where are the cows? So
I going to ask.
So that's the next question you were going to ask. So in California, the other thing that happened in the mid-century onwards is that land prices, particularly on the coast, skyrocketed. Mm-hmm. And on or about the mid to late 60s, that people really were feeling that. And so around that time, again, let's call it late 60s, unless you were one of the big industrialized dairies, and there still are a few in Southern California, most of the family, high-end family dairies moved above the Golden Gate Bridge to Marshall and Petaluma and areas like that. Yeah. And so at that point, the people that own this dairy made a decision, which was you're either going to remain a dairy farming company and processing, or you're going to be a dairy processing company. Mm-hmm. And the simple truth about the dairy farming business is that it's commoditized. It's expensive. Mm-hmm. It is really more about animal husbandry and about getting a cow's tail across your face at 4 a.m. than it is about, getting out there into market and selling your products. Unless it's very, very, very hyper local. and McConnell's at that
at that juncture decided to be a dairy processing facility. And so we take in the milk stream, milk and cream, the raw milk and cream, and then we process it into our products. Okay. We no longer own cows. All those cows are up north towards SLO and Paso and inland from there.
That's it for this quick stroll down memory lane on the Consumed podcast. To hear these interviews and many others, head to letsgetconsumed.com where you can search and peruse episodes, see photos, and get recipes. You can also sign up for the Consumed newsletter list, which offers updates on the podcast, more recipes, and even more than that. Special thanks to Chris Lambert for doing the original editing on all these episodes, and to Alexandra Wallace for the lovely collage celebrating the 20th season. Until next time, I'm Jamie Lewis.